time for the Vintage Truth Podcast with best-selling author and Bible teacher, Jeff Kinley.
Hey, thank you so much for listening in today. Hey, listen, have you ever tried to talk to an atheist about God? Have you ever felt stumped? Have you ever felt like, oh my gosh, they're smarter than I am. They ask me questions and I can't answer them. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about at the Vintage Truth Podcast. Over the next several podcasts, we're talking about what do you say to an atheist? What do you say to someone who doesn't believe that God exists? And even worse, not just say, I don't believe God exists, or I don't know if he exists. But even worse, they attack you for believing that he exists, treating you like some sort of subhuman or some, you know, intellectually challenged person because you believe in God. You believe in the flying spaghetti monster. You believe in the invisible friend up there. And so what we're doing here on the Vintage Truth Podcast for a few times together is to talk about some of the objections that atheists have and then answering those objections. And we have started doing that. We're into objection or argument number four, the first worst one being the presence of evil and suffering in the world. That's sometimes used as an argument against God. And then also we talked about the fact that God can't be proven scientifically. What do you say to that? Talked about that in the previous podcast. And also when they say there are no modern miracles, and so that proves that there's no God. And then we began talking about this argument here. The concept of God, they say, is a logical impossibility. Okay? Now, the quick answer is to that is, well, so is the concept of calculus to a two-year-old. But that doesn't, of necessity, mean there is no such thing as calculus just because there is a person who cannot conceive of it logically, okay? Now, that doesn't disprove the existence of calculus, doesn't disprove the existence of God either. Just because someone's mind cannot comprehend something, is unable to presently comprehend something, does not mean that that something doesn't exist. And God, by definition, when you say God, capital G, you're talking about an uncaused being, okay? You know, people often will come up with the question, well, then who created God? And really, it's one of the dumbest questions you can ask because you're asking this question, who caused the uncaused being? It's a contradictory question. And it's an illegitimate question because you don't cause an uncaused being. And by definition, that's what God is. But let's get back to this for a second. Just because someone can't comprehend something doesn't mean that something doesn't exist. So I would ask the atheist this question. Our atheist, we're calling John here, okay? John, could it be that there is knowledge that exists beyond your comprehension? Okay? And obviously he would say, yes, of course there is. And we could follow up by saying something like this. The fact is, John, we all accept thousands of things in our lives that we cannot understand or comprehend. I mean, we don't fully understand how life begins. We don't fully understand the human mind, the brain. We don't fully understand everything about why our heart just continues to beat. I mean, I don't really understand all, you know, presently, all of how a television works or how the internet works. How are you even hearing my voice right now? How did my voice go from my mouth to your ears through a recording device? How did that happen? Now, it can be explained. Does it mean that I shouldn't believe in it just because I don't understand it? How can they split the atom, John? John, do you know? I don't know. That doesn't mean I don't believe in atoms, right? Hey, I once heard the story of a missionary who went down to South America, and he was, bringing the gospel to these unreached tribes, these Indians that had been in the jungles, for hundreds, perhaps even thousands of years. And so he was trying to explain to them things about the new world and about the civilized world. And he was talking about ice to them, frozen water, ice. And the South American Indians, because they live near the equator, they could not comprehend the concept of ice, because to them water was something that flowed in the creek and the stream and the lakes and the rivers in the ocean. How can water be hard? That is impossible, they said in their minds. You know why? Because they had never experienced it. Why? Because it was outside of their realm, of their circle of comprehension. And surprisingly, that's exactly what many atheists do. They deny the existence of an eternal, infinite God, an existence, by the way, they cannot understand, they cannot explain, they cannot fathom, in the same way these Indians could understand the concept of ice. And yet, at the same time, they willingly and easily accept the idea of an infinite, eternal universe, whose existence they also cannot understand, explain, or fathom. So this doesn't logically conclude. It doesn't logically make sense when you try to argue the non-existence of God by saying that he's a logical impossibility. By the way, here's something else that's illogical, is saying that the universe is infinite, which is what some atheists claim, that it had, you know, they say the Big Bang, then you say, well, where did the elements for the Big Bang come from? And they don't know. And that really leads to what's called infinite regress, because infinite regress just means that things keep going back and keep having causes, but they don't have an ultimate cause or an initial cause. And there has to be an initial cause, because you cannot have infinite regress of causes back on into infinity. There has to be, it's a denial of cause effect, which is illogical. So finite objects must have a cause. And the universe is a finite object, therefore it must have an original cause. And they cannot explain that original cause. And they get back to kind of their foundation, which is the Big Bang. And they can't go back any further than that, because that's where their mind stops. And yet that's illogical, because whatever caused the Big Bang would itself have to have a cause. So anyway, so the concept of God as a logical impossibility doesn't fly. Argument number five. They say that man actually created God. God didn't make man. Man made God. And why did man make God? To fill an emotional need. Now, we'll talk about that, but I usually ask this question as well in this discussion I have before. What if you just said man created God to fill an emotional need? What if atheists, in order to fill an emotional need, what is that need? The need to avoid the fear of death, the fear of judgment from a higher being, the fear of potential punishment in hell forever. What if atheists created the idea of atheism in order to fill that need in their life so they wouldn't have to face those truths? They could just turn the argument right back on them. But let's talk about it. Could it be that atheists have made up this concept of God's non-existence so that we won't have to worry about facing him one day? I mean, just because, you know, someone famous like Freud or Nietzsche or Marx says something, or even, you know, modern day atheists like Christopher Hitchens and people like that, people say things about God's existence or God's non-existence, but words, I don't care who says them, me or them, words do not create truth. They can either demonstrate truth or explain truth, or they can try to deny truth, but words are not in and of themselves truth. They just simply display truth. So let's talk about this. The real question here is not, did man create God to fill an emotional need? The real question is, on what basis does the atheist have to dismiss the idea of God? And what I mean by that is, what is his objective basis? Because he's laying at the feet of the Christian the fact that subjectively we just created the concept of God because we felt something and we wanted to alleviate a fear. We wanted to relieve our sense of being afraid of what's going to happen after death, or how to explain evil or whatever. But on what basis, what objective basis does the atheist have to dismiss the idea of God? What is his reasoning? And does that reasoning, is it backed up with evidence? Because see, here's the deal. A person's belief in something, whether it's God or whether it's nothing, is only as good as the object or the foundation of that belief. So here's what I'm saying. You have my belief in God and the atheist's belief that there is no God. Those are two beliefs. Those beliefs have no bearing on whether or not what they believe in actually exists or doesn't exist. The belief is only valid if it can be backed up by evidence, okay? So if the atheist can produce sufficient evidence to disprove God, then I would say he would win the argument, or, you know, win the philosophical position of reasoning. But the Christian also has to bring evidence to the table as well. It's kind of like this. It's kind of like if you've ever been out to a frozen lake or a frozen pond or whatever, and you've stepped out onto that that frozen water. I've done that. I spoke one time up at this place in northern Minnesota at some camp, and there was a lake. I mean, a massive, massive lake. And it was a men's retreat, and the men had parked their trucks and their snowmobiles out onto the lake. Okay. And they explained to me that the water on the lake was 2 to 3 feet thick. And therefore, I could get on a snowmobile and ride as far as I wanted to on the lake, and I would never fall through. We played hockey on the lake, and they drove their trucks on the lake, that type of thing. Now, here's the deal. You can have a whole lot of faith in thin ice, in 3 inches of ice, okay? And it doesn't matter how much faith, how much belief, how much confidence you have, how strongly you believe in your belief. It doesn't matter, because those 3 inches are not going to hold you or your truck. Okay. By the same token, you can have just enough faith, just a very little amount of faith, to step out onto 3 feet of ice, like I did initially. And it didn't matter. The amount of my faith did not matter, because the object of my faith, the ice, was 3 feet thick. So I was able to eventually prove that the ice could hold me up, but I initially did not have very much faith. So you see the point here? The faith is not the issue. The object of the faith is the real issue. Faith is only as good as its object. So when you say something like, well, man created God to fulfill some kind of emotional need, the real question is, what is the object of the Christian's faith? What is the object of the atheist's faith? Whose ice is thicker? That's the real question. So that argument doesn't hold up as well. Argument number 6, they say, well, unanswered prayer. Okay, so, I mean, granted, if there's not any such thing as a God, you would expect every prayer to go unanswered, right? Or rather, your prayers would just be haphazard, and they would be like self-fulfilling prophecies. In other words, you would say things like, oh, God, I pray for grandma to get better, and then grandma, you know, gets better, not because there was a God who healed her, but just because grandma got better, you know, because her body healed itself, or she went to the doctor or whatever, you know? So let's talk about that for a second. They say that unanswered prayer is an evidence for the fact that God doesn't exist, but by the same token, what about those who claim that their prayers have been answered? I mean, if it's possible for prayers not to be answered, then why is it not possible for prayers to be answered? How do you explain answered prayer, John? You know what I'm saying? And the basic premise of this is that atheists, being non-believers, do not understand the nature of prayer itself. They don't understand how we relate to God. And, you know, how do you define answered prayer? I mean, we believe that God answers prayer when he says no. We believe that God answers prayer when he says wait. And we believe that God answers prayer when he says yes. Christians would admit that God, even though he exists, does not always answer our prayers in the way that we want him to. Another thing that I would say in response to this is that God typically doesn't answer prayers of people that are not his children. So if you claim that you've prayed and nothing's happened, probably because you don't have a relationship with him. That would be one reason, or one way to explain that. And it could also be that if he is the kind of God that the Bible describes, which is a God that is all-wise, all-knowing, all-loving, sovereign, if that's true about God, guess what? Then he decides which prayers he answers. You say, well, gosh, that's not very fair. No, that's not true at all. Because, John, if you're a parent, you know that sometimes your children ask you for things that you don't give them. And sometimes those things are not given to them. Why? Well, because they're just stupid things. They don't know they're stupid. They're kids. But you know they're stupid, and they're not good for them. And so you don't give them, you don't grant them their request. Another reason why a parent doesn't answer his child's questions or his child's petitions is because they know that something better is coming, or that that's not good for them in the long run. Or maybe perhaps they've already bought that present and it's in the closet waiting for the child's birthday. So that's why they don't answer. You know, and the whole point is that parents know more than kids. Parents know why they say no and why they say yes. And sometimes they simply say no because they don't want that for their child, because they're the parent. Guess what? God is infinitely more wise and powerful and loving than any parent on planet Earth. So he certainly has the prerogative as God to say no to those things. So just because you've witnessed prayers not being answered, just because John the atheist saw, you know, his friend Jim pray for his wife to be healed of cancer, and guess what? She didn't get healed and she died. So therefore, he concludes that your God must not exist. That's a faulty cause-effect argument there, because sometimes God does not answer our prayers in the way we want to. And in fact, to be honest, if Jim's wife was a Christian and she died of cancer, she is healed now and she is in heaven. So ultimately, his prayer was answered in a way that's better than her being healed here on earth, although it's not very fun for us, admittedly, right? So the whole unanswered prayer thing it cannot be supported. Here's argument number 7. He says, well, I believe that one of the reasons why God doesn't exist is because of hypocrites in the church. And here's how I would respond to that. John, here's what hypocrites prove, okay? Hypocrites prove, and they only prove, that there are hypocrites. That's the only thing hypocrites prove. Someone who says they believe something but act another way. So is this a valid reason for rejecting the existence of God because there are Christians who are jerks or Christians who don't live according to what they believe? How do we answer this objection? Well, first of all, I would agree with John that there are hypocrites in the church, okay? I've been a hypocrite. I act hypocritically in my life. I don't always live up to what I believe. But I would say this, the church, I mean, do you not know that the church is made up of humans, of sinful human beings, that none of us are perfect? And just because the church, the organization of the church, contains hypocrites, or Christianity contains hypocrites, doesn't mean that all Christians, first of all, are hypocrites. And I would point out, for every hypocrite in the church, there are 10 genuine believers who live consistent Christian lives. I mean, would it be intelligent or logical to judge the whole based upon just a very small fraction of them? What if someone commits murder and they happen to be an atheist? And I would then say, well, John, you must be a murderer too because you're an atheist. Well, that's illogical. So just because there may be a dishonest car mechanic doesn't mean that you shouldn't ever get your car fixed. Just because there's one doctor who's sued for malpractice doesn't mean that all doctors practice that way. And so Christians aren't perfect, but we are perfectly forgiven. And I would agree with him about hypocrisy, okay? But I would say, you know what? That's something you actually have in common with Jesus Christ, John, because Jesus hated hypocrisy too. And he addressed his most condemning words to the blatant hypocrites of his day. I mean, read Matthew 23 and 24. But just because Jesus rejected hypocrites who believed in God did not mean that Jesus then concluded that there was no God, right? So there are hypocrites. We admit it. Jesus admitted it, and Jesus hated it, and we should hate it too. That's something that we as a Christian and John as an atheist should have in common. Another thing I would point out, third thing about this whole hypocrites thing, is that Christianity does not stand or fall based upon the actions of Christians. Christianity is valid based upon the person and the work and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, period. And were there to be no person in the church or no Christian that was not hypocritical in his or her life at some point, that would in no way invalidate the reality of Jesus or of God, because Jesus is the hinge upon which Christianity swings. So, and he always lived consistently, you know? In fact, he challenged his enemies to point out any hypocrisy in him, and they could not do it. Hey, I have a few more things to say about hypocrites on the next Vintage Truth podcast. So I want to go ahead and just cut it off right here. But please stay tuned because we're going to wrap this thing up next time and then give you some really, really positive things that you can give your atheist friends concerning the existence of God. Hey, have a fantastic week. And I'll talk to you next time, the Vintage Truth podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Vintage Truth podcast. Please subscribe and share with a friend. For more about Jeff's ministry, go to jeffkinley.com.